Please welcome Owen Benjamin.
Even you had Andrew Tate. He was like, welcome, brother.
That's great.
I'm trying to be more mature as a person. It's not going well.
Salaam alaikum, guys. How you doing? My next guest, comedian farmer.
My favorite thing to do in the world, I'm now in my 30s. I'm trying to grow up, you know?
Also a former player in the Hollywood scene.
Oh, we have Owen Benjamin.
You enjoy the high life.
So go ahead, fellas. Laugh it up.
Owen Benjamin.
I'm talking about this stuff is heavy, man. Amazing. This guy goes in.
Please welcome Owen Benjamin.
You're trying to build a Dawah center here. Islam is violent by nature.
Assalamu alaikum, brothers and sisters. This is exactly why we need the Deen Center, because we have over 300 million Americans who know nothing about Islam, like this guy.
You want to have a talk?
Yeah, this guy's trying to build a Dawah center in our country. And Surah 9 is the most violent chapter of the Quran.
The Deen Center will be a source of light, a mega Dawah center, an educational center, helping our brothers and sisters in humanity truly understand Islam and Muslims.
He's been featured on Punk'd and Comedy Central Live, and he's also been on the Jay Leno show. And here he is. In fact, his name is Owen Benjamin.
Yay!
I did it. Look, I did it again.
I wanted to talk to you about social media.
Okay.
Because I love you.
I love you too.
I think you're a very good guy. I really do.
He was also the script writer for the Steven Crowder show.
In Vox the Gestapo.
Dude, that's so funny.
Actually, he created a theme song that was sung by Tommy Robinson, the Rebel News. It's called How They Rule Ya. He's here again on the Deen Show, my friend Owen Benjamin.
Islam, this is the Deen Show.
I love you very much. I love the work that you're doing.
When I was ready to talk about it, I would only talk to you.
And I was explaining how much respect I have for the faith of Islam.
Welcome to the Deen Show. The Deen Show.
Thanks for having me, man. Those credits are always so funny to me. Because it's like, it was such a light switch went off in my head when I realized that when they say Muslims or Islam, when they're referring to mass migration, it's such a dirty little trick, isn't it? Because I was authentic. I was never a shill. I was never, paid by anyone or trying to hurt anybody for an agenda. I literally thought that, mass migration. Oh, I didn't know anything about Islam. I thought that all the Fox News stuff was right. But then I started learning why there's so much mass migration. It's usury, and then I started being like, the How They Rule You song. I don't know if you know that whole story, but I was going to play it for Tommy Robinson at one of his rallies. But they saw on my YouTube that I was making fun of Jews. And they were like, we can't have this. And I'm like, what are you talking about? We're like the rebels. We're standing up. And then I realized something was seriously wrong with that situation. Cause I'm like, no, I make fun of everybody. Like they always say that I'm a sacred cow slaughterhouse, So it's like Canadians, Danish people, Jews. I'm like, I had Paul week just making fun of the Apostle Paul, it's like, I'm that guy. And so when I realized that they couldn't take Jewish jokes, I was like, oh, you guys, there's some fraud going on here.
Let me get into this tweet. This is a tweet that you did that caught a lot of people's attention. I'm going to go ahead and read it out, and then we can go ahead and get into it. This is on X. You can check out Owen Benjamin there. People keep asking me if I'm Muslim. I've never read the Quran, so I can't be. But I really like Sharia law. It's cleaner, destroys subversion, promotes wealth, no income tax, and the jizya, the tax of non-Muslims, is very small and excludes you from military service. The Judeo-Christians love to point out jizya as oppression when just its existence shows you can not only be a Christian in a Muslim country, but your taxes go down. There's no more usury and sodomy promoted in public, and porn is illegal. It was really funny when I realized Islam already does every single thing the right wing pretends to want. End of the Fed, ban sodomy, no income tax, no porn. But yet, for some reason, it's evil because Ben Shapiro said so. I've come to the conclusion that most right wing conservatives don't actually want solutions. They just want to complain and drag their feet, but still act exactly like the liberals they claim to oppose. That fundamental hypocrisy will lead nowhere good. Just turns people into zombies. And then you also, you had a lot of reactions to that. And even you had Andrew Tate. He was like, welcome, brother.
That's great.
Yeah,
that's
I don't know if you saw that also. Yeah.
I didn't see that, no.
Yeah.
Like once people start replying, I usually tune out because a lot of times they get so nasty, especially when I was I had Pajit week where I was making fun of Hindus. They went nuts.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, they'll put your wife on pigs and they're like crazy. So usually when I post something, I'll just I just walk away. Like I'll debate like early on, but then I don't notice. But that's awesome.
But well, here when you said okay, you said a couple things here. You said that okay, the Sharia law. I mean, most people don't understand. That's just like saying the Ten Commandments. This is like what every prophet and messenger of God Almighty brought. This is the law of God. That's all. It's nothing different.
Yeah, yeah, no, and it's really clean. Like it's so funny when I saw that, man. It's like I was always considering myself, well, not always. I used to consider myself a liberal when I was in Hollywood, but that's just because I never thought about it or I wasn't exposed to it. Like I had never, you know, been married or, you know, seen what a family really is or seen some of the stuff that there or seen the propaganda they were going to roll out or any of that stuff. So I was kind of naive to it. But all this stuff that they complain about, like the Steven Crowder types, Sharia law kind of fixes. And so, and I think usury is such a deep problem with the world right now, you know, loaning at interest. I really think that, you know, declaring war on God is a fundamental problem with so many things. And so, you know, and also I was talking to Dr. Shady about that, about like, why do conservatives push back against Muslims? And I think one of it is the big lie that Islam is a race, that it's like, they'll have this paranoia that they're being replaced, because there are areas of America where that is happening. I don't know. I'm sure that's happening in Europe too. But what people don't understand is that's because of usury. That's because of like their wars. They're like bombs a place. You know, now people are seeing it with Palestine, like right in their face, like what the agenda is. You know, Israel gets paranoid. They want a pipeline, whatever it is. They bomb a place. And then people have to leave because it's been destroyed. And then people in the West want to put them in debt with like mortgages and credit cards and all this stuff because they create money out of nothing. And then they bring them in, and then, you know, locals feel like it's displacing them. And that's, I think, a fundamental why conservative, because I always hear that, you know, I'll be like making fun of British people or something. And someone's like, when are you going to make fun of Muslims? I'm like, Muslim isn't a race. It's a religion, you know? And I also like the way Islam views race, where it's like, you know, tribal supremacy is bad, where it's like nobody's born more moral because of their race, you know, and I get called a white supremacist all the time, but I don't feel that way at all. Like when you're born, like you are, like I'm no better than a black baby or a Asian baby or anything like that. But you do have a right to like lineage and family and a people. And I think that balance is really important. Especially in the West, when Theodor Herzl, you know, the father of Zionism, openly has said that he's going to use race in the West, where he's going to, you know, where the MO is tell blacks they're permanent victims and tell whites they should be ashamed forever. And that's so destructive, you know, with like little kids, like having them be ashamed or feeling like a permanent victim. And so I use comedy to try and break that.
Yeah, it reminds me when we talk about the race problem and everything, when Malcolm X, when he went to, I think, I don't know if we mentioned this before, when he went to Mecca, and then he got to do the Hajj and the fifth pillar of Islam, and then he sat next to people who were white, yellow, if they were purple people, they'll be there too. Just basically people from every nationality, race, color, and then he came back and he said Islam is the solution for the race problem. If America would implement Islam. This is one of his statements. And it goes back to Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him, who said that there's no difference between the Arab or the non-Arab, the white and the black. It's your piety, your God consciousness that separates you and elevates you.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you've been talking to Dr. Shadi?
Yeah, he's a good dude. I talked to him a couple months ago. Yeah, he's hilarious.
Very nice. Yes. So, yeah, these are the things that when you look at, I like what you're talking about. When the conservatives, you know, they talk about many of these things, but then they don't have a practical solution. You have, and then you point these things out, and people have become like zombies. And this is the nice thing here, that Islam actually gets to cutting out these social ills that are destroying society, pornography being one of the biggest ones. And then the attack on Islam with this jizya, and you point out just some common sense things that if you were to give people the option, do you want to pay that 30-40% or you don't have to serve, you'll be protected, and you only and you actually pay very, very little.
One of my best friends up here is Muslim, and it's so funny how they're like the stuff that he's taught me about it, and then I've followed it up and looked into it. Is so fascinating, like how the tax system is so much better. And I've watched decades in America go by when people complain about income tax and blah, blah, blah. And in Islam, I know you know this, but it's like, what is it, like 1-2% of your total wealth, you know, to help the poor?
2.5, you like,
yeah. If you have 100 cow, you give away 2.5, you know, I don't know how you give away a half a cow, but it's like, that way you spread the wealth, that you don't have these generational dragons where like the poor can be benefited from the wealth of the rich. But it isn't this insanity that we see in the West where it's like, you know, in California, it's 60% of your income. And then the way it works in the West with usury is like the poor are hammered. So it's like 12-15% interest rate, but yet the rich are at 1.5%. It's like the Hunger Games, like the different districts. And so, and a lot of times these like giant banker types, like they know that Islamic banking creates more wealth. You know, it's almost like that show Shark Tank, where if you want to invest in a business, you get a percentage, not usury. And that's a win-win. That's when everybody benefits. But yet the way they enslave the nations and the way they enslave, you know, the poor is these like ridiculous interest rates where it's like, now no one can afford a house without a loan. And, you know, I'm very blessed and fortunate that I got out of debt. Like my whole family lived in this one room that I'm in right now for a couple of years in a barn because I didn't want any mortgage. Like I didn't want to be a part of that system anymore. And then we built a house and everything's going really well. And I can see it clearly now how usury works. So it's like, when you get that system where it's 10%, 20% down, over time, no one can afford a house. It's like this crazy trick. And then you give the rich, you know, like access to cheaper debt. And so they get to start leveraging their house to buy everyone's house and then raise all the rent. And then you get this situation that we're in now, you know, and that's why it's like, I think usury is at the heart of so many of the West problems. And then the woman has to work to pay all the debts. And then you don't have a mom. And then you're raised by media. And then, you know, women feel compelled to go on OnlyFans and become prostitutes. You know, it's like, and I don't know, man. It's just, it's a real illusion that's cast over the West about, you know, and then you go back and you watch old videos or you go back and you read old books and the way women were dressed was a lot more Sharia compliant, you know, like this Make America Great Again movement. If you go back to when America was more moral and wealth creating and high trust, it looks a lot more like, you know, an Islamic country. Mm-hmm. It's so interesting.
Yeah. To give people an idea, it's like, okay, so with the interest, like if you get a home that's worth, let's say $300,000 by the end of the term that you, if you pay it off, what are you paying? Like, what is it, over $1 million? In just interest, what does it come down?
Well, yeah, and that's aimed more at the poor. So if you're like a welder and you have like a 700 credit or 650 credit, you're looking at $900,000 for a $300,000 house. But if you're Donald Trump, it's $400,000 because he's part of a class that doesn't have to pay as much. And then so it's not fair. And then you see these people building these giant New York City towers in crippling debt. And you're like, I don't know. There's just something so satanic about that.
Here's the common sense of it. Look, if you want to bring followers onto you if you want to have a bigger congregation and you want more people to be with you, you're going to just kind of get rid of all these laws. You're going to, like, if you follow me here, like, let's say you have circumcision, you have taken away with pork, alcohol, usury, interest, all these things. Why would Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him, make it so hard on himself to gain followers? And then if you look at these things that are prohibited because God prohibited it, it's things like you're saying, there's wisdom behind it. I mean, just, and then if you're somebody like, let's say Paul, for example, where he said, look, you know, the law is pretty much, you know, circumcision of the heart. All this stuff is pretty much, you know, the curse of the law. You don't have to follow it. That's a great way. Now it's like, hey, Jesus died for your sins. Put it on JC gold card, right? You just put it. It's the JC gold card, right? Who's picking up the tab? Oh, gee, then it avoids personal responsibility. You're accountable for yourself. I can't die for your sins. You can't die for mine, right? You have to go ahead and call on the Creator alone and ask for forgiveness. I mean, what do you think about that?
Yeah. The JC gold card is such a funny thing because it's like there are really good, noble Christians, like a lot, but the churches, a lot of them are getting extremely corrupt, like how you just described, with like, you can sin all you want. He died. Like you're good. And I tell people where it's like, oh no, you get a restart, you get a forgiveness, you get a do over, but then you have to stop what you were doing. That's like because people always say, you know, he with no sin cast the first stone is a way to hide their sin. But the next part is rise and sin no more, where the whole point is like, where it's like forgiveness, where we all have a way out. You know, like Satan, one of Satan's whispers is like, you've gone too far. There's no going back. Like, you might as well just keep going.
Always
like,
hope. There's always, yes.
There's always hope. But see, the problem with a lot of these institutional Christian churches at this point is they're like, oh, we're all flawed. Just keep doing whatever you want. Like and it's like, no, you have to stop, you know? And I was talking to my Muslim buddy recently about how I'm not in the pyramid anymore. Like I used to be rep by CAA. I was in Adam Sandler movies. I was like, you know, I was a lead of a sitcom, you know, development deals, all that stuff. Like I was rep by the most famous, most powerful agency in Hollywood. Wow. Like, and the guy who created it singled me out to write me a TV show because I had that like charisma that they like, you know? And so I know that world really well. And now that I'm out of that world, he was like, dude, you only it's straight to God. He's like, you're accountable to, like, most people are accountable in that pyramid. Like, oh, what does my agent want? What does my manager want? For me, there is no layer above me. So it's like, I just have to try and be the best person I can, because the more moral I am, the more blessings I see in my life, and the more twisted I am or the more weak I am, the more I see problems. And it's so true. And it's so like in everyone's life, like there is that connection. And yeah, it's interesting. Oh, and go ahead.
No, go ahead. What were you going to say? The funny thing was?
No, funny story about what happened to me in Hollywood is the thing that made me rise really fast was that I've always treated other people just based on their character, where it's like, I don't know, maybe it's because I'm 6'8". I really don't know. But I just have never been, that like, that celebrity worshiper, you know, where it's like I'll meet like the head of Warner Brothers and I just see him as a dude. And so I treat them normally and they'd find that so refreshing. You know, they'd be like, and I'd ask them about their families and I genuinely care. And other times, like the guy working at the back of the comedy club that everybody overlooked because he had no power, I would genuinely like and be good to that guy. And then when he became the head of Comedy Central, he remembered me, you know? And so that was always how I was. But the flip side of no idol worship is when they'd want me to do what they wanted, I wouldn't do it because I didn't see them as above me. So it's like, that's what happened in Hollywood. So I'm this like noble savage to them where it's like, oh, he's so like authentic. He's like a real person. And so I'm rising. And then they're like, you can't make fun of Beyonce. You can't make fun of David Hogg, you know? And I'd be like, no, you don't get to tell me that. Like, we're equals. And they're like, and that's when I realized that they want to be gods, you know? And that's the major sin of Hollywood is they view themselves like they want worship. And I'm like, I don't worship you, dude. Like, we're just friends, you know? Mm-hmm. And they're like, I run this town. And I'm like, bro, you can barely tie your shoes. You're a mess. You've had five divorces.
That's what I want. That's what I wanted to ask you next. You got it's a sad state that many people, they look up to the stars, you know, I want to be like the star. I want to be a celebrity. So they think this is the American dream. They go to Hollywood, sell their souls. And now they're looking at you, somebody who was a Hollywood star. And now you're a comedian. You're on the farm, right? You're living the farm life. And, you know, what's the difference between that life, living that life? So hopefully we can sway some people to go more in the right direction rather than in the wrong direction.
Yeah. The people that most people look up to are miserable. And I was telling this to a friend recently. It's worse being miserable in a mansion because you can't blame it on money. And that's one reason why a lot of them are so, they get so dark, because when you're like, when you're poor, when you're struggling, you could be like, man, if only I had more money, if only I had my car worked, if only like I owned my own house, like then they own 20 houses and they're even more miserable. So it's like, that's when they get into these weird, dark caverns, because it's just an emptiness, you know. And a lot of times very successful people are driven from some form of child trauma or, you know, like some form of like insecurity where it's like, I gotta be tougher because you were beat up, or I got to provide, you know, like I would have issues with money where I'd really want to like make money, because growing up we didn't have any money. And my dad would always, you know, talk about how at any point we're going to be homeless. So it's like, I would pick cans out of garbage cans. And, you know, as a little kid, I was like really into making money because I saw that as like a security blanket. And so a lot of times the people that rise really high in these like secular worlds are driven by the ghosts of their childhood. And that if they don't deal with that and they don't forgive, and if they don't like, you know, realize that God provides for you, not this, like this is paper. Like people kill for paper, you know? And it's like that emptiness doesn't go anywhere, because that like climbing, there's nowhere to go. That's why Jesus, you know, said, the kingdom of God is within, where it's like you already have it. You've already been gifted this. And that's one thing that got me in some conflict with Christians is my view that of original sin lines up more with Islam, where it's like we're born in complete submission, like we're born perfect, and then we start choosing bad paths. And my mom even believed that. My mom, when I was baptized, you know, I was raised Catholic, she refused to call it baptism. I come from a lineage of stubborn, strong people. You know, it's like, she was like, no, my baby wasn't born with sin. Like this is, she called it entrance into Christian community. Cause she's like, no, like this baby is born right. And I've always had that in my mind. And then I found that lined up with Islam where we're born whole. And then we start choosing to go away from God.
Absolutely.
And I think that's so true.
We call it original goodness, not original sin. We're all born pure, original goodness. Yes.
That's how I view it too.
Absolutely. Yes. And that goes what we call the fitra. The fitra is the innate nature that we're all born with. When we explain that God is only one, he alone is worthy of worship, that you don't worship the creation, but you worship the creator. That naturally goes with the fitra. You would agree with that, correct? That you only 100%. Worship not Jesus or Muhammad or Moses or money or fame or your ideas, but you worship the one who created Jesus, created Moses, created the sun, the moon, the creator of the heavens and the earth. That makes sense. That goes with the fitra.
Yeah, it's logic. It's basic logic too. I mean,
basic
I don't know, common
sense.
Yeah, I don't know if you remember my Trinity Wars, but
I thought you were having issues with the Trinity. You were.
Yeah. And I backed away from all that because my role as a comedian, I'll just say what I believe. Like I would never be a coward and say something I don't believe. But I just, you know, that it gets so dark with people with that stuff. And because my whole thing was, who did Jesus pray to? You know, and that one question was so jarring, and I had so much conflict, but I'm not one to back down from conflict, but at all. But it got so intense, and I'm like, but it's such an obvious question. Like, it's so simple. And I remember growing up Christian, it wasn't like it is now. It's almost getting worse. And if you go back before the Scofield Bible, it was always like Jesus was the Messiah. He wasn't God. Like, I remember that. Like, I have these memories that that's how it was told to me. And then somewhere along the line, it was like, oh, but he's God. And you're like, how can you be the son of yourself?
Yes.
And it's just that like childlike, because I have kind of like a childlike mind a little bit, where I think a lot of artists have that, where it's just very simple. I view things very simply, which
me
can
too,
sometimes,
yeah,
which can frustrate people. But I'm just like, it's just this very simple view of like, how can you be the child of yourself? And it made people very, very angry. And so I realized my role here is, you know, to help raise morale, to like break spells. And I just, you know, that religious brainwashing, I'm not going to call it brainwashing, that's probably insulting, but it's like something's going on with that. Like, if you know the nature of evil, which I've over the years kind of started to understand, they always want you to do something retarded. Like, that's like the whole thing. It's like, whether it's abuse yourself or, you know, it's like something that's off. That like evil always wants to humiliate, you know? Mm-hmm. And so just to get you in that mind warp where, like in Christianity, it says Satan is the father of lies and the father of confusion. Like, doesn't the Trinity sound extremely confusing? Mm-hmm. And then I'd use humor where I'd be like, where they'd be like 100% man, 100% God. And I'm like, what about the ghost? Is it 100% ghost, 100% God? Like, what about the ghost? Do we pray to the ghost? Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, what do you mean? I'm like, it's the same logic. So if you have three things and Jesus is man and God, God is father and God, and ghost is God. So can I pray to, can I be like, dear ghost? And they're like, no, not that. I'm like, that's your logic, dude. I'm just telling you your logic back to you. You know, I just don't understand it.
Yeah. When me and you, we did our first program together, and afterwards, people got to see it, and the bears, a lot of the bears and people were sharing their thoughts. I mean, people were like, man, I used to hate Islam. I used to, you know, have this warped vision. I saw the programming with so many other things, but after listening to you guys talk, it was like, how can I have been so programmed the way I was? And just me and you coming together and talking and talking about goats and goat milk and life. And we were just talking about basic stuff. And we had a good conversation back and forth. It really opened a lot of people's eyes. And I think more of these conversations just are so important. And if we point out something, it's not that, look, I have Christian friends and we discuss things and you can believe what you believe, I believe what I believe. But then we point out some obvious things and to consider, just consider it, right? It's not a disrespect or anything. Just consider like the things you're having people to consider. Consider this, you know, why is Jesus praying to himself, right? Who controlled the world when he's allegedly died? Like, just obvious things that your brain is like, hold on, why do we not shut off our brain when we're dealing with stocks and bonds and real estate? We really want to make sure we're signing the papers right. But our salvation over here, why we want to, you know, turn off our common sense?
Yeah. And I'm not a religious expert at all, like zero, but I am an expert at mind control and like, you know, social engineering, just because of what just being a comedian, being dropped in like different cities for 20 straight years, where I'd have to figure out how people are in that city within a day and then make them laugh. You know, one day I'm at a Mormon corporate event. The next time Miami with the Cubans, then I'm in New York with the Jewish bankers. And the next minute I'm in Chicago with the gangbangers, you know, it's like, so I literally have had to adopt really fast at cultures. Like, I have to read the room and adapt. Like, the irony about black jokes is that was how I survived black rooms. Like, black rooms like alpha comedy. They like mockery. They like going hard. And the irony is so many like Jewish women will be so offended. And I'm like, this is how I survived Cleveland, you know? So anyway, so my skill set is understanding like culture and human nature. And that, like, it's almost like I'm the CIA of comedy. Like, I just have to quickly learn. And so one way to do mind control in Hollywood is you get someone to believe a contradiction. Like what you just described, like praying to yourself, it creates a loop. And what happens is our mind almost operates like a computer where it starts looping. It's almost like on a computer where that circle spins and you have all these apps open. So the more contradictions where it's like abortion is healthcare, or like, you know, women working is freedom, or, you know, all these like contradictions that they do, it starts looping in your mind and it exhausts you so that it breaks your free will down so that you'll do anything you're told. And so that's a fact. Like, I may not know Leviticus properly, but I do know how to break someone's mind. And so when I'm looking at some of these church things where they're like, okay, let's come worship God. And then they play Coldplay and they wave a rainbow flag and they like have a Israeli flag. Like, I went to a church up here and there was a Israeli flag. And me and my buddy, who was a Navy SEAL, we're like, we're out of here. Cause he saw the lie. You know, he was in Afghanistan. He's like, dude, it's not what they said it was. Mm-hmm. And so he was very sensitive to that as well. And so we're like, yeah, we're not going to this church because it's like, so you read the Bible and it says the synagogue is Satan, or you like look at Benjamin Netanyahu and you're like, is he operating as Jesus would? And it's just so contradictory. And then they put that symbol in front of you. It's like it breaks your mind so that you just submit and you don't, and you're not like a full person, you know? And so that's, I do know that that is happening every single day with these. That's why these childlike questions, don't run away from them. Like, people should not run away from them because you're healing your mind. It's like when something isn't making sense and you just, like when I was, I've been doing this my whole life. When I was 5 years old and my parents, my dad was a professor and my mom was a stay-at-home mom. And they'd have all these like snooty intellectuals over. And there was this one picture of this guy, Sartre, who started existentialism. And he said, hell is other people. He was all about selfishness. You know, mm-hmm. It was this really postmodern guy. And there's this picture of him on an iceberg. And that was selfishness. That was like, and I, at 5 years old, I just said, who took the picture? And everyone just started laughing because it broke the spell. Like, obviously he had someone taking a picture of him being alone, you know? And I always tell that about people. Like, whenever you're watching something, just remember someone's operating the camera. And like those type of little spell breaks, that's why people call me the spell breaker. It frees up your mind because like those little spells, they keep you in a state of like self-imposed slavery. It's crazy. Yeah.
When you mentioned the Israeli flag, then you mentioned Schofield, it had me thinking to a guest I had on not too long ago, a pastor, a senior pastor, Rick Wales from True News. And I was asking him, Pastor Rick, can you tell me why are there so many Christian Zionists? And he went into the dispensationalism. I don't know how much you know about this. You probably do. John Nelson Darby. And Jonathan Darby, who was taking many of these fringe, way out there teachings of Christianity, put them together. And then you had Cyrus Schofield, who met a man who knew John Nelson Darby. And Schofield, he was a con artist, a con man. He would spend some time in jail. He got out and all of a sudden got his DD, Doctor in Divinity. And he went out preaching much of the teachings, end time prophecies, and John Nelson Darby's teachings. Got a lot of followers. And then he got, this is the hook here, he got connected with the vice president or president, the pastor explains, of the American Zionist Institute. So they go ahead and take him and get this book, the Cyrus Schofield Bible, printed, UK Press. They push out 1 million copies and more for free. And in the Cyrus Schofield Bible, the interpretation of certain verses for 1800 years, it wasn't linked to nothing at all with Israel. And whoever blesses thee is blessed, whoever curses thee is cursed. And many of these Jesus returning twice, he says nothing to do with Christianity. So they started to make the exegesis of these verses, connecting it to the modern state of Israel. So now that's how you got, and then the late great Planet Earth pushed like 40 million copies and so many other of these series. And then people like to, you know, hear about end times prophecies and the end times and whatnot. So much of this stuff is forced fake. And what happened was that now we have what we have today, the flag in front of the churches, and Christian Zionists make it up more than Jewish Zionists. And this is all from the programming, all of this propaganda. So Christians believe, and I think this is very important information because they're seeing you know, teachings of Jesus, right? Blessed in the Bible, blessed are the peacemakers, love your neighbor, and much more of these, you know, Jesus being the Prince of Peace. But you're seeing a modern day genocide happening. You're getting kids like blown to smithereens, and you're supposed to be following the example of Jesus, but instead you're like worshiping the Zionist rabbis and Zionist haters, warmongers over there. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and as soon as that they rolled that out in October, I don't know if you saw my Twitter, but I was hammering that right away.
Like we got to just be a little bit like PG here. I don't know what we can say.
Well, I mean, totally PG, totally PG, totally. It was because it's the spell breaking. The more like a child you are, the better it works. And so my spell breaking with that was just like, who acts more like Jesus, a Palestinian or an Israeli? And just that question, people are like, oh, how dare you? Oh, yeah, you, sir. I'm like, okay. I would show them, you know, like Michael Rappaport walking through Gaza with no gay bars. And they're like, look how oppressive this is. And then he's in Tel Aviv with all the gay bars. He's like, and I just post that and be like, okay, which one's acting like Jesus?
I got that. I actually got that from you.
Let me tell you something. If you're into sex stores, or anything LGBTQ, do not go to Gaza.
Actually, and we did a program on that.
Cool, yeah.
That when he was walking through where he was walking through Israel, and he was like, you can't have this, and he's pointing to the
Yeah, and it's like hell. He's like showing you, he's like, you can't have this hell. And you know, and dude, it really changed my mind when I had kids. Because before I had kids, I was so not, I didn't care about much of this stuff. I'm like, anyone can do what they want, whatever. When you see that they market kids, it matters. Like to have that stuff in public is damage. It's like, that's damage to your next generation. And that is revealing a lot. Like I'm seeing a lot of people waking up to this, like the coverage. This is the first time their atrocities have been so covered and so in the open. And you'll have your Nikki Haley's and your bought and sold shills. Like they'll double down, triple down. Like they'll never, you know, they legit have like hatred in their heart. And, you know, I'm sometimes seen as like a quote unquote racist comedian just because I make fun of everybody. And I'm telling people, I'm like, when you got me back in the brown people, like you've gone too far. So anyway, I'm like, you're killing innocent kids. Like this is crazy.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh no. And that was just my whole point where it is waking people up. You might not see it because the talking heads are so overpaid, like the money that these guys are getting. But as I said earlier, depression in a mansion is worse.
Yeah.
And so the people, like I'm in Northern Idaho and, you know, I have a very strong like Christian community and none of them are backing, you know, this insanity. In fact, it's very humiliating. You know, it's like, especially after the Truther movement of looking at, you know, this is something I definitely won't mention on your channel, but like certain events, you know, when you actually look into
Building 6.
Yeah. You know what I'm talking about. So it's like when you look at some of these events and you realize that it isn't the Muslim in the cave, just so mad at our freedom that figure, you know, everything starts falling apart because that was the thing that got everyone so angry at Muslims where it's like, oh, they're going to attack us on our soil. They're going to do this. They want to take away our way of life. They want to hurt women. And then you start looking at like, I don't know if you saw that one tweet I did go viral, but Andrew Tate responded to that one too. But it was a building in Los Angeles. And it's almost like God's, it's like just so perfect showing the truth that you can just feel the hand in it where it's, you have like, a giant billboard that says something like, it says something like, free Iran from the, what do they call when you cover your face?
The hijab.
Yeah. It's like free Iran from the hijab. And right above it, dude, was a naked woman advertising pornography on the same building. And so I took this picture and I tweeted them like, dear Muslim women, like they're not trying to free you. They're trying to enslave you with pornography. Like that's what why they want to take your hijab off, you know? And that's like so once you start seeing that, where you're like, because I used to think too that, you know, Muslims hated women. They want to oppress women. They won't let women be women. And then you realize, especially now with like AI stuff coming out, where if you put women on the internet, like they can do stuff with AI that's really shocking. And so to protect women from that evil eye that's always like looking around is love. It's not hate. It's love. It's like when you actually love a woman, like when I got married and I really love my wife, like in that protective way where I would fight or work, or I would put my life on the line for my wife. You realize you don't want them exposed to the world, you know, because
This is what we call the fitra, the innate nature. You have this protective jealousy, you know, and it's made look like something bad.
Yeah, totally. And before, I understand how men would like show off women and be like, look at how beautiful the women I get are, but it's all ego. If you actually love a woman, you don't want to put them in bikinis on the internet, you know? And so like, it's just fascinating how inverted it is and how that's one reason why there's so much hatred aimed at Islamic countries, because it's kind of like when you're sober, like when you're sober and you're attempting to have the same friends as when you drank a lot, just being sober reminds them of what they're doing and they hate you for it sometimes.
That's so
like,
true.
You know, it's so true. Like I'm from a town where everyone's drunk all the time. Like no one's sober. And I don't drink now. Like, you know, occasionally I've, you know, whatever, but it's like, I haven't been drunk in years. And so if I'm out with those guys, or if I'm around people drinking and I'm just completely sober, they just start looking at you like, who do you think you are? And I'm just like, what? And they're like, how dare you not join in? And like my sobriety is reflecting their sin. It's like magnifying it. And it's the same way with Islamic banking and stuff like that. It's like, how dare you not go along with it? Because if everyone's doing something, you don't notice it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like in comedy. Like when I started making fun of stuff that Hollywood doesn't allow you to do, that's one reason why they had to silence me so intensely. Like I was kicked off Airbnb. Like I know what it's like to be treated like a terrorist, you know, but with no crimes. Mm-hmm. And that's one reason why I started getting goats. I'm like, I no longer view people the way I used to. But anyway, it's because if you're doing it and they can't, their cowardice is revealed. Like when I'm making fun of Jews or something and no one else can, even though there's so many jokes, it's like, why can't they? Like, why can no one on Netflix do a joke about Israel? Like nobody's allowed to, you know, why can no one make fun of sodomy? It's like, there's nothing funny about that. Like there's nothing strange about sodomy. And so if one person's doing it, it reveals the whole scam. And so that's why if you have Islamic countries that are banning porn and banning all this stuff and they have strong families and high birth rates, it just makes the West feel bad. It makes like these scummy people, you know, if you want to compete, you can either build a bigger building or break every other building. And that's the satanic way, you know, and that's what they're trying to do.
And when you mention this, some of these terms, this is actually for any Christian, Jew, anybody looks into the Bible because they like to pick on Islam. This is actually forbidden. Leviticus, the Ten Commandments. In Arabic, this is Sharia. This is also forbidden in the Bible. What's left of it, what's preserved, what's there, what we have of it, you have it there. It's also forbidden. This is something that's not just exclusive to Islam. If you really want to follow the text, the laws that are... And we're trying to preserve that. So let me ask you another question here. Just one more point back on what we had talked about, this Cyrus Scofield Bible, because many Christians, and I think now watching us and listening, they can go investigate this to look into this, because then because a lot of people feel it's a part of their creed now. They feel like, you know, they're not Christian. It's a part of their creed if they're not supporting something like this, but actually has nothing to do, like the pastor Rick Wales said, has nothing to do with Christianity. So you can go ahead and be a voice for the voiceless and speak out against this, the killing of these innocent children, which is a very, very sad state to be in.
Yeah, and there's a lot that see, I mean, I've had mega church pastors write me that they saw that the Trinity wasn't backed up in the Bible or Zionism.
Yeah.
Oh, tons. Yeah. And, wow. And then they'll just move on, because like what happens is, which is unfortunate, is the money is so tied in with Zionism. And like that, as Charlie Kirk says, the workaround from usury from Exodus, Like the Jews found a workaround. It's like, that's not how laws work. You don't get workarounds. And so all that free, he really said that. Like, I'll send you a clip.
I saw it. Yeah, on the Patrick Ben Davis show. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, oh, but we found a workaround. It's like, So what happens is these guys, there's a ton of Christians that see this, tons, but they can't get in positions of institutional power because all that money is coming from usury. And so you have to go with XYZ in order to have the usury. And so they find themselves in like from a mega church to a basement, you know, and a lot of them are happy. They're just like, yeah, I went through what you went through. And, you know, even the flock turned on them because they'd lose their tennis courts and their football stadium. You know, it's like, it's all about materialism. It's all about like in Texas, when Steven Crowder brought me to his mega church, it's beautiful. It's like you have these pristine things like a gym and tennis courts and football fields and special effects and music and all that, but you're not allowed to question usury. And usury is, you know, when it says God called usury, you know, declaring war on God, that's not something you find workarounds with. You know, it's not exactly like cotton fiber or like mixed fabrics. You know, it's like war on God. Like that's as clear language as you can get. And so, but they want that money, you know? And so a lot of it has to, like, the love of money is the root of all evil. It's like that love of money where you would do anything for money is just horrifying. And that's what a lot of Zionist churches are facing. And the more it's revealed what Zionism really is, because 2 years ago, a lot of people didn't see what they're seeing now.
Yeah.
You know, like you got Jake Shields and all these guys, like some pretty famous guys, showing you images of what's happening in Gaza and showing the paraglider narrative is so ridiculous. You know, it's just so like, it's like, okay, so we spend all these billions on their Iron Dome. If only guys with paragliders and flip-flops didn't go in there and then, you know, kill unborn babies. It's like, what are you talking about? That's not even like, it's not even close to reality. And I don't know, I wasn't there, but it's like that storyline. And one of my buddies was like posting pictures of like just trying to troll Zionists, and they bought all of it. They like he blocked out his kid's face, but he had him like this, and he was like, look at what the Muslims have done to this poor Israeli. And Ben Shapiro retweeted it, and it was this kid. It was like he's just like they don't verify anything. Like any atrocity, they're like, oh yeah, retweet. Like it's all nonsense. You know, like the burn babies and all that stuff. That's like AI. It's just people trolling Ben Shapiro. And so now that people see that, it's going to make the tennis courts not feel as fun. Mm-hmm. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of this stuff has been debunked. We've discussed this on some of my previous shows. I had Max Blumenthal and others, you know, investigative journalists, and a lot of this stuff, this atrocity propaganda, to go ahead and stoke the emotions. And many of these relief agencies who push this stuff, they made like, one of them made $50 million. Can you imagine? So it's big business. Tell me this, you mentioned Steven Crowder before I go to my next question. It had me thinking, like, you actually, we talked about this in our first episode. You are a script writer for Steven Crowder. He has a big talk show, and you went from where you were at that time to saying peace be upon him, right? And many people, like, they don't understand, like, us as Muslims, we love Jesus. I mean, you cannot say any disrespectful word about Jesus. I ask Christians, my Christian guests that I have on, do you have any problem if I say Jesus, peace be upon him? And they smile and they laugh, right? But then we won't mention, there's another group of people out there who they are truly the Antichrist. We don't have to go into the details there, but then there's alliances are formed, and you make the person who respects and loves Jesus as your enemy. And then you got past the programming and you were like, they say Jesus, peace be upon him. Why am I over here? Like, you remember that?
Yeah. That's hilarious. Yeah. The thing is like Crowder was better than what I saw in LA. Like, so it was so refreshing when you first see like even a Christian Zionist be like openly say there's something wrong with abortion or openly say being gay is an ideal. And it felt like water to a thirsty man for me. You know, I'm like, oh my God, I can do comedy with a guy that can say true things. And so then as the time went on, I became more of a truther with that incident in 2001. And they hate that because that starts unraveling the whole thing. And so that's where our relationship really started falling apart, because I'm like, they would call Islam a death cult. And I'm like, but they have a higher birth rate. Like, how is it? Like, I'm like a child, dude. It's not even like I'm quoting religious texts. I'm like, how is something a death cult when they have a higher, they have more kids? Mm-hmm. Because at the time he had no kids. And I'm like, it's funny. My brother's friend Abdul has 9 kids. Like, how is that? Like, how is that the death guy? And so that's just when things started unraveling. And, you know, I wish him well and everything, but it really is like he painted himself into a pretty brutal corner where, and I pointed some stuff out during his divorce, where he was deathly afraid of Muslims back then. Like, he would be like, oh, they're going to find out where I live or blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, his pregnant wife, he's like telling her to take an Uber. Mm. I'm like, who do you think drives Ubers? I'm like, it's going to be a Muslim guy. Like, he didn't even care. So at that point I'm like, is it dementia? Because things don't line up. Like, let's say you actually are deathly afraid of Muslims. The last thing you're ever going to do is take an Uber. Like, and the funniest thing is Uber, I think, is actually deprogramming Hollywood, because every time back in LA, I'd take an Uber, like, I'd end up with some dude named Mohammed or Abu Baker. And by the end, we're just like dying laughing. Like, he's all my friend. Oh, welcome. And I'm just like, oh, hey, Abu. And then by the end, we're like making fun of Israel. And like, it turns out, like, in their last country, they were like an engineer. Yeah. And now they're driving an Uber. And I'm like, why do you got to drive a car when you're an engineer? It's like, oh, my friend, you know, we had to leave. It was bombed. And I'm just like, oh, man, those guys suck, huh? And they're like, oh, my friend, it's okay. Peace be upon everyone. And I'm just like, man, these are like nice guys. Like, Uber really did kind of change the game. Uh-huh. And so, I don't know. That's just a couple stories.
It goes really against the narrative. They want to kill us. They hate us. They hate our way of life, huh?
Yeah. Meanwhile, an LA guy goes from movies to TV and he's miserable. But Mohammed from Iraq goes from managing a factory to driving an Uber, and he's smiling and has 10 kids. It's like something isn't adding up here. Uh-huh. And so, you know, like in LA, it's like you lose one thing, one of your precious little squares. Yeah. And you're just miserable. Oh, why do I have to drive a car? He's like, oh, welcome, my friend. Oh, 5 stars, please. Oh, thank you. And you're just like, how are you so happy? Like, why are you such a nice guy? Yeah. Like, you're not a terrorist. Like, you're not trying to blow someone up, you know? And so I think that was a major turning point as well. I think Uber changed all of politics.
Wow. Let me take a shift real quick, because I'm into that's what I do for a living, actually, is I teach martial arts, jiu-jitsu. And recently you were commenting on Sneeko.
About to have a really bad day in the next minute.
Sneeko also accepted Islam not too long ago. And then he went up again against Sean Strickland. And Sean Strickland, I don't think that was right, what he did also. You know, if somebody, a novice, comes in, you're trying to help that person develop, not just try to give them brain damage and stuff. And you had some comments on that. what are your thoughts?
Oh, yeah, I went hard on that. Because I don't like bullies.
Me neither. Me neither. That was bullying. Yeah, that was horrible.
Yeah, and my two oldest sons are already in jiu-jitsu, and they're like 7 and 5. Like, I got nothing against – not only do I have nothing against – mixed martial arts, like, my kids do it twice a week. It's like, cool. I think it's amazing, you know, jiu-jitsu, and then maybe when they're older, some boxing or some strike. I played football and lacrosse. I played football and lacrosse, so I'm not a martial artist, but I'm very comfortable with violence and like the art of it, like how it's a sport. It's not like I hate my dad and you just like hurt somebody, like that's weird. And so when I saw that, and I like Sneeko, I did Sneeko's stream recently. Such a nice kid, you know, he's such like a genuine dude. And he was just like wanting to spar with Sean Strickland, and Sean Strickland just starts unloading on his head. Now, let's say you wanted to teach someone a lesson because they were being arrogant or something, not the head, mm-hmm. you know, it's one thing if you just like submit them really fast or like, or some body blows or something, like something that like hurts, but like you can do legit brain damage if you're swinging. And Strickland swinging as hard as he can. And so I just go at, I'm just start mocking him for that, you know, because it was like, I think there was a political agenda, because Strickland immediately backed Israel after October 7th. And he said, like, you know, Palestine has no GDP and Palestine hates their kids and whatever it was. And so, because I used to think Strickland was kind of funny, because I kind of like loose cannons a bit. Like, yeah. I like people to just say whatever. And after that day, like the October 7th day, it was just, you could see who his shill was, you know? And so then when you got Sneeko, this like nice dude, you know, and obviously I think that Strickland probably has a handler, and they were just like, humiliate him, you know? And it's so ironic. No, not ironic. It's so funny that, like Palestine, Sneeko didn't go down. He just took a beating. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was the funniest part, is Strickland didn't knock him out, even though he tried. He was like, you could tell he was doing combos. He was throwing uppercuts. And then you'll see Strickland sparring with someone that actually is a good fighter, and it's nothing like that. Like, he's not just this like unhinged animal. He's a coward.
Yeah.
You know? And so I don't like that at all. Yeah.
So what had me thinking, like, when I watched some of his stuff before, some people sent me and they wanted me to react to, because some of his views had changed. He said he used to really go hard after Islam. And then some of his training partners, Hamzat, you've heard of Hamzat, Chimai, and others, he would have to really calm it down, because they'd come up to him and say, hey, you know, what's going on with this stuff? So he started the show. I think he was on the Joe Rogan, and he was saying, you know, he really tuned it down and whatnot. And then I was listening to one interview, and he was talking about, then he started to criticize Islam. And I was like, hold on. Some of the things you just mentioned here about how America was, if you go back, you know, the dressing and whatnot. And I was like, hold on. He was talking about traditional values and stuff like that. I was like, hold on. If he was really like being fair and he looked at really what Islam promotes, this is going more in line with the worldview that now conservatives and others want. But what I was like, what are you talking about? Are you talking about American values? Like, what are they? And like right now, that cross-dressing, what, like, you know, turning boys into girls into boys, sexualization of children. What are you talking about? This is what Islam, you know, God's law puts an end to, stops these kind of things and makes society really great. If you want to make a society great, you implement the way of life of Jesus, of Moses, of Abraham, of God, God's way of life. So it seemed like a really big contradiction. And
yeah, and he pushes despair too.
What?
And he also pushes despair and inevitability, which is something that I can't stand that. When he's like, you might as well go with, he was telling Joe Rogan, like, you might as well go with the LGBT because they're going to get it anyway. And I'm like,
I didn't hear that. Yeah, that's
fine. Yeah, I'll send you that clip. It's, and Joe Rogan actually was the voice of reason, which is crazy in that scenario. Mm-hmm. I'm like, because Joe Rogan's like, no, enough's enough. Like, he's talking about how, when empires are falling, they get obsessed with gender and all that stuff, which is true. And Strickland was just like, yeah, they're going to get what they want, though. It's going to happen. Yeah. I'm like, no.
This,
you know,
go ahead.
Yeah.
This.
Yeah, that's a whisper.
This is why it's so important to be grounded in the. Because you look like a ship without a rudder, and you're all over the place. Your desires take you left, take you right. And one minute now you're going with, you know, one crowd. Next minute, you know, the popularity shifts. And what do you stand for? But when you stand on God, on, you're with a person of God, of principle, of integrity, and you know what God's laws are, there's no shift then. It's like, this is how it is. And I'm not going to bend for the dollar, for the money, for popularity, for clicks, for likes. That's it. God said that it's between a husband and wife in marriage. That's it. I'm not shifting. Porn, that's it. I'm not playing with it, right? We can all fall and make mistakes. There's always mercy, come back, but it's not for the dollar, for a political position that you now shift these positions. This is, and again, you're like a boat in a without a rudder. You're going here, there, wherever the wind, in this case, the crowd takes you.
Yeah, and I always really look at who's promoting stuff.
Yeah.
Because everybody has weaknesses and failures, and they deal with stuff. And and I'm not here to judge people's soul.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. But it's when you're teaching it is when that's when I become, you know, like if I ever look like I'm purity spiraling or like really going at somebody for something that maybe a lot of people struggle with, it's because they're doing it in public and they're trying to get the youth to do it. And that to me is like, it's one thing if you have your private struggles, but when you're like telling kids it's good, that's That's like, that's a whole different ball game. And so that's what I go so hard at.
Mm-hmm. So here, this was the original tweet that we started with, and we read this. People keep asking me, I'm a Muslim. This is the one where you got Andrew Tate. He was saying, welcome, brother. So he was obviously agrees with everything you're saying there. And just the last part of the tweet, or the beginning part, I wanted to mention, I've never read the Quran, so I can't be one. And I wanted to just clarify this. If you, Owen, if you met someone tomorrow at a bus station, a train station, or on the plane, right? The turbulence hits and you're like, oh man, you're like, now that's when people really start thinking they need to take life serious, because death is right in front of them, they feel. But if a person never read the Quran, but they agree with this one thing, that God is one, absolutely pure, absolute monotheism. That's it. No three in one, God being a man, having a son, none of that. That God is one, the same belief of Jesus, Moses, Abraham. And you believe in this, that you only worship the creator, not the creation, one God alone worthy of worship. And now Jesus is the messenger, Moses is the messenger, Muhammad is just the final messenger, peace be upon them all. You never read the Quran, you agree with this. Yeah.
I agree that God is one and not to worship the creation. Yeah, I have like a lot of...
That's it. If someone agrees with that, they're pretty much a Muslim if they believe.
Yeah, that's when it gets interesting, because it's language. Like my buddy was like, Mu Islam means submission to God.
Yes.
Allah is God. Yeah. And so it's like, yeah, it's interesting. I just like, when it comes to theology, I don't know. Since I haven't studied it, I don't know all of it. But it seems like I am more on that. Like, so sometimes I tell people I'm Abrahamic, because I'm like, because Christian, now, see, I'm a stubborn dude. I don't want to let go of what Christianity once was, and now the Schofield and the Trinity and Zionism and all that. But it's like, it just gets so, there's so much confusion with all that stuff, you know?
Here's what I tell people to do. Tell me if this is fair. This is for, like, I'm like you, the common sense, you know, think like almost like a little kid on certain things, you know, yeah. Got to make sense. Is there's a statement from Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him. He's narrating that God said that, this is like the creator. Imagine, he's saying, all of my slaves, we're all the slaves of God, you admit it or not, are misguided. All of them are misguided unless I guide them. So ask me of my guidance. Just ask. Asking the creator alone, guide me. If this is the truth, guide my heart to it. Is that something that's reasonable? That's it.
Yeah, of course. I do that all the time.
Keep sincerely doing that, and then things start opening up. I mean, asking the one who Jesus asked, not through an intermediary, not to a saint, not through a dead person on the ground, not through anyone, but direct dial-up. That's it.
Yeah, it's funny. Catholicism gets a little bit almost like, it's almost like voodoo at some points. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, and it's funny, because one guy that really helped me see that Islam wasn't against Christianity as a Catholic. You know, E. Michael Jones?
I heard of him, I think, yeah.
Dude, you guys should talk, man.
Set it up, yeah, we like to.
Yeah, he's great. He's a Catholic scholar who's like, but he's been like, he gets in trouble all the time because he takes it seriously. Mm-hmm. And he said Islam prays to the same God, and he's like very against Zionism. And so that guy's great. So I have to give props to some people that in my life, you know, my godfather was a Catholic monk, but I never liked all the same, like I never liked like trinkets and, you know, where it's like, oh, pray to the saint of a broken leg. And I'm like, I don't know. I never vibe with that. I always prayed to God my whole life.
Do you believe now, from investigating what you've read, have you read an autobiography of Prophet Muhammad?
I haven't. I know very little, actually. I just know, like, my friend will send me sections of the Quran that relate to what I'm, like, talking about. Like, for example, like multiple wives and stuff like that. Now that I understand what life was like then, especially after I had Pajit Week and I looked at Hinduism, where it's like, they were burning people, like they were burning women that weren't married, or they were enslaving them. And when you look at how a man can provide for more women and what the other options were, it all just started making sense. So I've started seeing some of that stuff. Yeah. And then you look at how our ancestors were married much younger and how that was a protection for women. And so, yeah, like I know some stuff, but there's a lot I don't know, but I know that the stuff my friend sends me, I relate strongly to it.
Yeah, and most people, they spend a lifetime learning, and pretty much it's not something that someone overnight has to absorb all of the tremendous amount of knowledge. But it's like someone who goes to look at a property that they're going to live in, or a car they're going to buy, for example. There's certain things that you go in to look at. Is the engine okay? Transmission? You don't go into all the nuts and bolts and all these stuff. So now, okay, what's the engine of Islam? The five pillars, for example, that you worship none but the creator of the heavens and the earth. You believe, you establish the prayer, and you start slowly developing your connection with your creator. You're going to make mistakes along the way. Hey, but that's why you turn back every day in the five daily prayers, and you learn, you grow, and your knowledge expands. But now you're committed to what God wants you to do. You've submitted. You've taken that first step, and you submitted. You're not there yet. Your faith is going to increase once you start doing the actions, like when you're in a gym. You know, you start signing up. You're not big. You're not healthy. You got to start implementing what your trainer told you to do, right? So that's awesome. I just wanted to share that with you. And we're here for you. If anything else, that's good. You had a nice talk with Dr. Shadi also. And
Yes. Yeah, and I think that talk about race, because like as a spellbreaker, it really is the racial component where people think they're being replaced. And if they get past that and they realize it's a faith and that really pious people aren't really the threat. Like, for example, in America, it's easy to see another race as a problem because of like a really broken culture or an acceptance of sin and a promotion of sin, where it's like, you know, like I was doing a stream yesterday about how in a lot of Jewish business, it's like they want to screw, like they get really excited if they pull one over on you. Like it's part of the culture. Like they're like, that's great. Like we won today. You know? And so when you have a culture of violence or something like that, but if you have people that are like clean and honest and work hard, you wouldn't feel that, you know? And so that's why there is a truth in that, where it's like, one of my friends is Scottish, who's a Muslim, and he just is like a tall white guy who's just getting married and works really hard. And those type of things would break the spell of Islam in America, because a lot of people view it as third world male migration with a lot of crime. Mm-hmm. And so which ironically is because of Zionism. So it's like when that spell breaks, I think we'll see a lot of unity between quote unquote Christians and Muslims, because it's really just that. It's people don't want to be replaced by people. Like if you can't speak the language, you don't understand the way, you know, people dress or what kind of music they like. Like there is that in-group preference, that's the main thing with Islam. It's not the way of life. It's not the religion. It's that. And I find that interesting.
Yeah, I think that's what you just said. When I interviewed Allison Weir, she's a Christian lady from ifamericansonlyknew.org, ifamericansonlyknew.org, and she exposes the Zionist agenda, and she brings the evidence that this was actually a push to create division between Christians, Muslims, and this Islamophobia industry was created by this particular group. Absolutely.
Because they don't want people strong.
Yeah.
You know, like imagine if you're not, you know, because people like these things that you're told to do and they help you, you know, when you have a family, when you are getting out of debt, when you're not watching pornography or taking drugs or getting drunk, like you will be wealthier, stronger, happier, less easy to mold and manipulate. And the system doesn't like that. You know, the system wants you to be a docile, broken, needy, dependent. And so that's why they hate authentic Christianity or Islam, because they follow the rules. You know, Christianity bans usury. Christianity bans sodomy. Jesus said he wasn't here to change the law. Like that's in the Bible. It's like, but yet you have a con artist with his little note saying, but what he really means is the laws are to fund, you know, work around, and it's nonsense. It's like people got to start being honest with themselves, because they're only hurting themselves.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you once again. And Bosnia, we mentioned this last time. I want to say hello from a fan of yours, Orhan. Orhan, I mentioned his name before. In Bosnia, you still got an invitation there if you ever want to go in Sarajevo.
I still think about the juice, man. It's like, Like I'm growing an orchard this year with Golden Delicious. Yeah. Like those bottles you showed me of like juice. Mm-hmm. Because like when I used to like alcohol, it was more the like the journey of it, like the bottling, the type of fruit, stuff like that. You can do it without alcohol.
Yes.
And when you showed me that stuff, that was like mind blowing. Like mm-hmm. that you can just take a lot of pride and put a lot of work into having amazing juices, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what do you think? If would you ever take a trip to, have you been to Europe before?
Yeah, I studied in the Czech Republic. I was a World War II history major and I wanted to study like war.
Yeah.
I probably would go back to Europe. It's hard to get me out of Idaho. I like do one show here.
Bosnia, Orhan has a farm also out there. So they got goats, they got raw milk, they got everything.
That's awesome.
So think about that. And then also the heart of Jerusalem is actually, they call Bosnia. That's where East meets West. So much history. Most people, a lot of people speak English, and it's a beautiful country. So that I mentioned.
I'd love to check it out. I mean, I got friends over there. I got a lot of listeners in that region for
some
reason.
Yeah, you do. Yes.
Yeah. and the history there is unreal. Like you'll see these castles and ports and it's like, but you don't learn about it.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think caused all the problems over there? Like, cause I don't even know. We heard of Bill Clinton's bombing it, NATO, this, there's a warlord, you know, but I have no idea what happened over there. Like, I'm sure it's a whole other live stream.
That's a whole different story, but just in a nutshell, you had, from my roots, the Bosnians, we were Unitarian Christians. We didn't believe Jesus was God. We believed he was a messenger. We saw the corruption of the church, prayed outside the church. So when Islam came, it fit like a glove. The belief in Jesus being a messenger, worshiping one and only God without the Trinity. And that's when Bosnians became Muslim. So then they were considered by the church heretic. So that's where you had the division of the people from Catholics, the Orthodox Christians. And then this is what kicked it off from there. And then you have... from there, things developed as you want to go further. But we can.
Yeah, so it was a religious fight or was it economic or?
You had a lot of nationalism that pushed and the skies of religion at the same time.
Yeah, they do that a lot.
Yeah. So it'd be a nice place to visit. Thank you very much. It was really nice having you on again.
Thanks for having me. This is a blast. I really enjoyed
talking with you. And God willing, we can one day meet in person. Do this in person.
And how do I get to Bosnia? Is there like a main city there or is it just called Bosnia?
From Bosnia, usually, let's say you're traveling from Chicago, you go to Europe, you can go Frankfurt, Vienna, so wherever you're at. And then from there, it's about an hour, two hours flight to Sarajevo. And then Sarajevo is the capital.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would love to go there someday. Yeah. I'd love that.
All right. If you love, we'll talk off air and maybe we can make that happen.
All right, man. Peace. I got to go milk some goats.
Thank you, brother. Thank you.
Peace.
I cannot leave without giving you a gift. If you're not yet Muslim and you're tuning in to see what these Muslims are talking about and you like a free copy of the Quran, go ahead and visit thedeanshow.com. We'll take care of the postage and everything and get it delivered to you. And if you still have some questions about Islam, call us at 1-800-662-4752. We'll see you next time. Until then, peace be with you. Assalamu alaikum.